The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Now, look, Ricky Gervais is not to everyone's taste, but believe it or not, he tweeted this week that his show Afterlife is, thanks to global streaming services, the most watched British comedy programme in the world. And audiences have clearly been flocking to it. But who do comedians turn to when they want to laugh? Well, I'm joined now by Steve Cummins, who's a comedian and co-founder of ZoomParty.ie, and comedian, actor and writer Sharon Mannion. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Brendan.
So, Steve, there are certain comedians who are the comedians, I suppose, and you will often hear a lot of comics say that the first thing that turned them on, particularly to the idea of stand-up and long-form comedy and everything, was Billy Connolly tapes. And it was Billy Connolly tapes back in the day.
It was tapes. It was videotapes, audio tapes that might be shared around among your friends.
Yeah.
And then videotapes. I had an odd moment with a videotape many years ago where I grew up in Moy Ross in Limerick. And we were broken into many times. One particular time we were broken into. And I mean, there was no gadgets back then, you know. So they stole a VCR, the old video. It was about the size of a microwave.
Yeah.
And three videotapes that I had rented from Video City. You know, back in the day when you used to go in and look at a wall of videotapes. And I can't remember what two of them were, but the third one was a Billy Connolly, and that's where the craziness came. Guards arrived. One big guard and two detectives arrived to our home. Early evening. The first thing was one of the guards was shining a torch indoors at the ceiling, and my mum, bless her, she was only 4'11", and she was a tough woman, and she just went, "Are you looking for clues? Are you going to find something up there?" And he sheepishly turned it down. And then she asked about fingerprints, and your man said, "No, it's too damp for fingerprints," which, any advice to any criminals out there, apparently if it's raining,
okay,
you can get away. But then it came to the video. I had to tell the guy what was taken. And I was young and nervous. And the guy goes, "Okay, what were taken?" So I told him the first two tapes, and then he said, "What was the third one?" And I went, "It's Billy Connolly Bites Your Bum." And he was like, "Bites your what?" And he goes, and I'm now more embarrassed, I went, "Bite your bum." And he goes, "What?" And one of the other detectives went, "Put down, bite your arse, let's get out of here." And that's what they did. And he just walked out the door. But I remember watching that fantastic Billy Connolly Bites Your Bum video many times before it was nicked. Billy Connolly was the... He was the god of comedy back then. I mean, he redefined stand-up comedy, if you think about it. He was rude, properly rude, and unashamedly rude, even though the swear words he used initially weren't really, you know, nowadays we could say them on air. Whereas back then they were, you know, it was pushing the envelope. But he was so gifted. And then 30, 40 years later, he was as funny and as relevant and as gifted as he was back then.
We have a little clip here. This is probably about the only broadcastable part of the Billy Connolly Bites Your Bum video from 1982.
In Scotland, or in Glasgow anyway, every year, once a year, you get taken to, when you're a wee boy at school, they take you into the countryside for the day. Supposed to do you a lot of good, you know. They put you in a bus and wheel you out there. And you all get off the bus and say, "Okay, boys, pay attention, right? That green stuff over there. Grass, okay? See the brown and white things walking about on it? Cows. Don't break them and be back here in half an hour."
And of course, he was coming from a kind of a different place to a lot of the light entertainment kind of comedians
Absolutely.
That we had in those days. But Sharon, like, we didn't always grow up with the most sophisticated comedy, but when we look back now, we liked it. Like growing up, you were subject to, you know, the likes of Dick Emery, the Two Ronnies and all them. That would have been your first exposure to comedy, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's you're certainly leading the witness there. It wasn't necessarily a bad exposure at the time, but yeah, certainly, like, I grew up in the middle of Roscommon, so like there wasn't much, there wasn't really a live comedy scene, a live stand-up scene outside Castlereagh. But so kind of I would have been definitely reared on those kind of old, more character-driven sketch type stuff. So the likes of Dick Emery, the Two Ronnies, Tommy Cooper, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You look back and Tommy Cooper now I still think holds up really well, and the Two Ronnies a lot as well. But it certainly was a more innocent type of stuff. It was perfect for at that age, you know. We loved it
at the time, yeah. And look, we'd play a bit of Dick Emery. Now, these are some of the famous Vox Pops from the Dick Emery show. But just bear in mind that it was of its time, okay? So here's Dick.
Excuse me, madam.
Miss.
Miss, may I ask, do you lead an active social life?
No, I don't. Not like the people in the flat above mine. They have wild parties every weekend. And drinking and dancing and all sorts of wicked debauchery goes on. Keeps me awake all night, they do.
Well, haven't you complained to them?
Yes, I have, but they still won't invite me.
Miss, a charming young lady.
Hello.
Hello, miss. May I ask you, do you lead a very active social life?
Oh, yes. My boyfriend says I'm never available. I have so many hobbies and I belong to so many societies.
Well, hasn't he ever asked you to drop them? Well, if you did, he'd see a lot more of you.
Oh. I like you.
You see, yeah, we are laughing, aren't
that
we?
That holds and, up, it does. Yeah. Still
it
is
does
right.
hold up. Yeah. It's just so silly. And the thing about watching that when you're younger, like, is that it's really, it is actually showing you sort of structurally, I guess, how jokes kind of work, you know, set up and punchline and all that. So there's definitely something in it.
Yeah. And the catchphrases. We all went around saying to each other, you are awful, but I like you. And I suppose, look, there wasn't that alternative comedy around then, Steve, anyway. Like, and like, would you have been exposed to those more old school entertainers, the I don't know, the Freddie Starrs and all those kind of guys.
Oh, Freddie Starr. I remember watching Freddie Starr. Des O'Connor Tonight. There used to be a Des O'Connor used to have his own TV show. It was such a great concept for TV because basically he'd bring on comedians and he'd throw them little softballs and it would be the, you know, one of their favourite routines or what have you. I remember watching Freddie Starr on that one day and it was a joke and it has stuck with me, whatever, 30, 40 years later. And it's a he goes, my grandfather had his spine removed and they replaced it with a mercury-filled spine. And everyone's like, well, you know, Des O'Connor would be great. And he goes, it was fine. He said, but on a hot day, he was 48 foot tall. And, you know, and like, that's a really clever joke as well as everything else. And then his stage presence, and he was crazy and he was wild. And of course, a lot of people, when they think Freddie Starr, they think Freddie Starr ate my hamster. That's the because that was the big headline in the Sun. And apparently, yeah, he may have done it. He had his substance issue problems and whatever back in the day. But to watch him live, I saw him once. I was in a bar and it was on the TV and he started singing Blueberry Hill, right? No, yes, it was Blueberry Hill. And he goes, I found my thrill on Blueberry. And he completely walked off the stage, like pratfall walk, dropped into the orchestra pit. I mean, it was deliberate. The distance he dropped was probably 6 or 7 feet. There must have been something to cushion him.
Yeah.
Everyone, there was a spray of beer all over the bar because people just
man falls off stage. Yeah, you can't beat it.
Couldn't beat it. It was perfect.
Yeah,
works every time.
Yeah,
exactly.
But like, there's craftsmanship in that as well.
There
you
is.
Have to know to fall off.
Even the timing of the wheel because it goes, oh well, on Blueberry Hill, where I and boom, gone. Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
So Sharon, when did you start getting into what we would now regard as more sophisticated comedy then? When did you realise there was life beyond Dick Emery and the Two Ronnies?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if I ever got fully sophisticated, but I definitely remember, like, there's something lovely about sort of discovering something and, you know, you'd find out years later then that everybody was kind of discovering it at the same time. So I remember discovering a Police Squad, you know, the Leslie Nielsen show.
Yeah.
And like, I just remember like thinking, what is this? You know, it's just so like, I just watched it. I soaked it up all the like, you know, the real just simple here, cigarette. Yes, I know. Like all of this, you know, or they're saying, oh, we better call the tow truck. And it's just a huge tow just dragging in a trailer. And just, I mean, I ate it up. And just that glorious thing. Like when people talk about albums or discovering bands when they were younger, I never had that, but I really had it with comedy where, by, you know, even I remember watching Brewster's Millions, the Richard Pryor movie, and I had no idea who Richard Pryor was, but I remember thinking, like, he's great, you know, he should do more stuff, he's brilliant. So I think I discovered Richard Pryor is what I'm trying to say. But, you know, certainly Leslie Nielsen was a huge, and the whole Police Squad thing was a huge,
and of course people know the airplane movies as well then. And Don't Call Me Shirley. And right. So we have a quick clip here from, this is Leslie Nielsen as Lieutenant Frank Drebin from the Files of Police Squad.
Just relax. Everything's going to be all right.
Mrs. Burton, what did he say?
Just relax. Everything's going to be all right.
No, the kidnapper.
He said he'll call us soon with instructions for the money drop if we don't do what he says, he'll kill Terry.
Lieutenant Drebin, what do I do?
Well, as I understand it, you're in the textile business.
Okay, that's Leslie.
But they don't stop being funny. The more of them he does. Like, you could, you know, like the airplane movies and Police Squad and all the Naked Gun movies. It's the same formula, but they're you still laugh. You know what's coming.
In fact, they kind of, as they layer them on, they kind of get funnier as it goes along.
Absolutely,
or something.
So
listen,
and there's nobody like Leslie Nielsen. I think wasn't the thing was that he was a serious actor. Basically, that was kind of he didn't really start as a comedian kind of thing.
Really,
and he was just, like he really is the king of deadpan because there's just not even a flinch of sort of knowing when he delivers those lines. He's just like he's all in.
Brilliant. Steve, then if we kind of segue seamlessly into the modern era, it was kind of, in a way it was our own Dave Allen would be the bridge between that kind of older school BBC entertainers and into the era of alternative comedy, because Dave Allen was, he was regarded as quite edgy at the time, wasn't he?
He was spectacularly edgy. I always found that Dave Allen, like he found his success in Britain, but he really pretty much spent his entire time there making fun of the English and making fun of Britain and their society, making fun of the clergy. He wasn't a big fan of the clergy in one way, but in another way, he kind of got them. He had a great old joke, if you just allow me very quickly, go. A priest walks onto the altar one Sunday morning and he goes, "I want to speak to you all about the demon drink." And out onto the pulpit, he takes a glass of water, a glass of whiskey and a worm. And he goes, "Look at the worm, happy little head in him." He goes, "Now watch this, bloop." And he drops it into the glass of water. Leaves him 10 seconds. He pulls him out. He says, "Look, not a bother on him. If anything, just a bit cleaner." He said, "Now watch this." Picks up the whiskey. Bloop. Drops him in. Pulls him out 10 seconds. "Look at him now. Stone dead. Now what does that tell you?" And one man in the congregation goes, "If you drink whiskey, you won't get worms." And it's just, it's a perfectly crafted joke.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Now, listen, I feel we don't need it now that the real Dave Allen will be a disappointment after Steve there.
Yes.
Let's take a quick bit of actual Dave Allen in action. I think he's talking here about the English and the Irish, and this is on the BBC, bear in mind.
"And the English actually consider the Irish to be a very strange nation. Anyway, they get an Irishman who applies at a building site for a job. And the Englishman said, 'London. Well, darling, we're going to have to give you an intelligence test, aren't we?' The extraordinary thing about the English, they always ask you questions. 'I went down the road, didn't I?' I had a cup of tea. No, I don't bloody know. What's he asking me for?" we're going to give you an intelligence test, all right?" And the Irishman said, "Yes, of course, all right." He said, "All right, darling. What's the difference between a girder and a joist?" And the Irishman said, "Well, that's simple. Goethe wrote Faust and Joyce wrote Ulysses."
Dave Allen there.
That makes you feel bad. It makes me feel bad as a comedian that I could never come up with something that good. Do you know what I mean? That's a beautifully written joke. It's fantastic.
Yeah, but look, you're no Dave Allen, but that's no, you know. Yeah. Who is?
Who is? Good point, I suppose.
Sharon, if we get on to the kind of fraught issue then of, and you know, there's the whole if you can see it, you can be it and everything. Were there any females around to be role models for you as you started thinking of becoming a comedian?
I do remember back in the day, again, in my sort of hovel in Roscommon, which was the sitting room, watching comedy late night stuff from Edinburgh. And I remember the Nulas were a big deal, like as in like, "Oh, look at these three Irish women just sort of doing comedy. That's mad, isn't it?" But certainly, yeah, there wasn't a huge amount of women doing it for sure. Like, and by the time I had, moved to Dublin and I was kind of starting into comedy, like the likes of, you'd had Deirdre O'Kane and a couple of people like that, and then Maeve Higgins was really starting to come big then, and so she would have been a huge influence as well. But there really wasn't that many others. I mean, there's much more women doing comedy now, but certainly Maeve at the time, and then more internationally, say the likes of Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, like just they really kind of, I think, smashed any ceiling that was sort of remaining there. And then there's sort of the Melissa McCarthy's and the Kate McKinnon's that have kind of come afterwards, I think.
Okay, the American kind of Saturday Night Live scene and all that kind of crowd, that would have been a big influence for you.
Oh yeah, I've always been like that. I mean, I do a lot of improv, so that's probably why. So I like all of those the Will Ferrells, the Mike Myers, the Bill Murrays, you know, Steve Carell, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, all of those that have come through that sort of Second City model in the States onto SNL and beyond and stuff. Yeah, that would be huge. They would be a huge sort of goddesses, gods and goddesses. I mean, Amy Poehler is basically who I pray to. Like, I mean, she's just, you know,
okay.
She's
well,
my
listen,
deity,
here is your goddess, Amy Poehler, with fellow goddess, Tina Fey. This is them at the Golden Globes.
The Hunger Games was one of the biggest films of the year, and also what I call the 6 weeks it took me to get into this dress. Ang Lee's been nominated for Best Director for The Life of Pi, which is what I'm going to call the 6 weeks after I take this dress off. Meryl Streep is not here tonight. She has the flu, and I hear she's amazing in it. George Clooney married Amal Alamuddin this year. Amal is a human rights lawyer who worked on the Enron case, was an advisor to Kofi Annan regarding Syria, and was selected for a three-person UN commission investigating rules of war violations in the Gaza Strip. So tonight, her husband is getting a lifetime achievement
award.
I love it. I love how they, you know, use the opportunity to just make little points as well. I mean, it's just funny, but it's also just making little points. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, super. And listen, before we move on, let's take for the Irish end of things, let's take a bit of that trailblazer from Cork then, Maeve Higgins.
But it's difficult absolutely. For an Irish girl to look like Jennifer Lopez, isn't it? Because she's got beautiful olive skin, whereas most of us are blessed with a Celtic complexion. Thanks a lot, holy God. Having a great laugh when he was making us, they'd say, oh, no, paler. Paler again, paler. Look how she glows.
Okay, Maeve Higgins there. Excellent stuff. So, Steve, if Amy Poehler and Tina Fey are Sharon's comedy gods, who's your comedy hero, would you say?
Oh, Stuart Lee, I think, is one of the most unbelievably... Well, how can I put it? Original comedians. Like, he deconstructs comedy while he's on the stage, while you're in the room, and he breaks the fourth, fifth, sixth wall, and then he brings it all together so astonishingly well. Like, he's a special, and I recommend it to anyone. It's called Carpet Remnant Warehouse, and it's long. It's like it's over 2 hours long. And it's a masterclass in not just comedy, but in public speaking, in controlling a room, in controlling 1,000 people. It's astonishing. He's an amazingly gifted comedian.
Yeah, all his specials actually in their own different ways are extraordinary kind of pieces of art almost, aren't they? Like, they definitely, you know, they rise above a guy up telling gags like...
Oh, way beyond that.
20 dimensions in there.
When you said about, you know, who do comedians find funny, I remember when he was due to play the Roisin Dubh in Galway, Stuart Lee, and I rang the owner, Kevin Healy, and I went, Kevin, I said, look, I hear you've got Stuart Lee coming over. Look, I will happily support him for free. And he went, lovely. He said, you're the fifth guy who's after ringing me to say that. Yeah. Like, we all of us willing to go. And this is when we're all broke, going, nope, I will work for nothing as long as I just get to be in the same room as the man would be amazing.
Yeah, breathe the same air.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, look, we started even with Billy Connolly, a comedian's comedian, and we finish up there with Stuart Lee, a comedian's comedian. Speaking of being broke, Steve, how are you getting on? Is there any sign of work coming back?
I have
back
been blessed. Thank you, Brendan. Blessed myself. And I rang a good friend of mine, Sean Gleason, there just about 14 months ago to check in on him because his company find a venue. He'd know, like just like Sharon, my diary was wiped out.
Okay, I see a plug coming here. Keep this
trying to make it a plug. Right, yeah. But the point is, we set up a company. We're doing you know, basically comedy and live entertainment for corporate stuff over online. We did 400 events in the first year. Like, it's been incredible. So
okay,
we've been
fantastic.
So lucky.
So pivoted like
so
a, like
all,
a good
all
restaurant
it basically took
pivoted
was to,
into
for me to become home. A successful comedian. All that had to happen was a global pandemic.
Okay, and Sharon, how are you getting on? Because I get the improv. Improv scene's a bit different. It probably has to be live, really, does it?
Yeah, I mean, we have been doing... I wouldn't go so far as Steve now to say that I've been blessed by the pandemic. Not at all. But we have sort of... We've kept our improv show going over Zoom every Monday night. But the live stuff has just been decimated. Like, I was supposed to be going on tour to the States the April. This all kind of kicked off. So obviously that was... wiped out. And now I write a lot for different things, so obviously that can kind of keep going. So I've been lucky that way that I can keep a certain amount of my career kind of going, but the live stuff, I mean, I think we're all just itching to just get back on stage and just, whether it's improv or stand up or sketch or, you know,
and look, Sharon,
show,
hopefully it will happen soon. But look, thank you both anyway for giving everybody a laugh today. Steve Cummins and Sharon Mannion, thanks very much. And we'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.